It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, we're not afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and we got a special day for you. We have Chris Rye. He is one of the directors of For Liberty, F-O-R Liberty. And you go to ForLibertyMovie.com, and you finally, we have an opportunity to understand what was behind the success of the Ron Paul Revolution. For the first time, we've had, you know, you got a bunch of little YouTubes out there. You have all kinds of opportunity to, you know, kind of get an idea of what people have been doing around their community. But you never really got a full breadth of, and you really never will. I mean, it's hard to be able to do that. I'm like, is it really, are you going to be able to have an ability to really understand what was going on? Well, somebody had to try, and they had support from a lot of the people that were doing things and supplied their video, and this went on for months. And we had Chris Rye put it together. I got you, Chris?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you doing, Ernie?
Hey, Chris. I got the website that you want them to go to, right?
Yep, ForLibertyMovie.com is the site.
ForLibertyMovie.com. Now, I want you to just explain to people at what point in the process of the 08 presidential election cycle did you get involved? I mean, when did you start to become aware of what was going on?
I think I started paying attention probably, well, I started just looking in the forums and kind of following the grassroots projects probably in maybe July or August of 2007 is probably when.
So it's after he'd already been in probably half a dozen debates. It really started kicking off. You're going, yo, what's up? And you hailed from what part of the country?
I'm from Central Wisconsin is where I'm at.
So you're in Wisconsin. So now, what were you doing locally there? Was there any activity going on? Did you have a meetup? Did you and your friends, you got paint on your fingernails? I mean, tell me what you were doing.
Yeah, we had a meetup that started up here. And Corey, the guy that I did the documentary with, he was the person that started the meetup. And my wife and I were just kind of poking around, and we found the meetup site, and he had just started the meetup group here just a few days before that we started looking for it, so it all timed out perfectly. And then we joined the meetup, went to some meetings, and probably had a good number of people were in our meetup here, and we were doing things, you know, making signs, hanging them up, you know, all the things that everyone else was doing.
Well, tell me about your movie-making skills. Did you develop those? Did you have those before? Was that your career? How did you develop? Because obviously the movie is fantastically done. I mean, everybody, you know, that's standing and cheering, and we had movie night here, and people were wanting copies, and they're ordering and getting and telling everybody, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to get you on. We can talk about it, but your experience came from what?
I've been working with film and video for probably the last 18 years or so.
Heck, how old are you, man? What, did you start when you were three?
I'm 37, so, I mean, basically, I got started, you know, my friends and I, when we were younger, we rode BMX bikes. We would, you know, ride up ramps and jump down handrails, and, I mean, just we were just little miscreants, you know, and we'd film each other riding bikes, and pretty soon started making videos doing that. And I have a company, Props Visual, that's another company I have. It's not involved in the documentary at all, but we've been making videos, BMX videos, for the last, you know, about that long, 16 years. We started in 1993. and we've had our stuff turned into TV shows. We have TV shows on Fuel, the Fuel TV channel, and so that's basically where I got my experience, you know, doing that for all these years, and I was able to shoot 16mm film some of the time. So I have a real understanding of, you know, just working with film, which is kind of different than video is, but with the advent of HD cameras now, the high-definition video, it's along the same lines as film is in the way it works, the way it looks, the look of it and everything. So that's pretty much how I got all my experience, and I'm really an editor, I guess you could say, an editor by trade. I've edited a large number of programs and videos and things like that.
Oh, there was plenty to edit. I mean, finally for the first time in human history, you have a revolution that we didn't need to worry about being televised because it was YouTubed all to heck, okay? So yeah. You had all this footage. How did you go about collecting this stuff? And, you know, just who did you know to contact? How did you get, I remember you guys, this would be interesting to a lot of people. You had this old diesel Mercedes that you were driving cross country on vegetable oil.
yeah, I have a 1984 Mercedes. It's a old car, and it's converted to run vegetable oil. There's a system you put in it, and it's got a special tank in the trunk, and you know, you just fill it with vegetable oil and you drive around for free, basically. And we had we took a 10,000-mile road trip last year in September of 2008, and we had all these people we wanted to interview for the documentary, and we just did basically a loop around the country and hit all these spots up, interviewed different people. And yeah, we drove that car on the trip, and we had a little pump with us that it was right off the battery of the car, and we'd pull up to the back of restaurants and, you know, kind of shade around back there. And, we talked to the owners if we could, and we just, you know, pump oil out of their fryer dumpster in back of their restaurant, and, drove the car around on that, for about 10,000 miles. So it was pretty fun going on that trip. And Mike Maresco was with us, the Ron Paul rider, and he's featured in the documentary as well. So it was a good time.
Well, the people that – how did you even know who to – I mean, it just kind of whoever popped up on your radar as people that were, you know, busy behind the revolution? Because we'll get into so many things that were covered, but it's how did you determine – who to interview? I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of people going, "Hey, yo, what's up, man? You should have called me." You know?
Yeah, we had a couple people, you know, "Hey, why didn't you interview me?" or whatever. But I guess being involved in the grassroots, and I was working on some projects, some video projects for TV ads, some grassroots TV ads with a couple people that started PACs, you know, at the Federal Election Commission. And so we were having to deal with all the issues with the PACs and raising money and stuff. And I started a PAC of my own that we had used for projects. And so I guess just having the PAC and dealing with some of these projects, I would just figure out who I need to talk to. Now I was talking to different people that were doing other things as well, like Trevor Lyman and some of these people, guys that run the Ron Paul forums, guys that run Daily Paul, and you know, they would help promote the fundraising projects for the PAC. So I guess I had a pretty good understanding of who the people were in the movement that were kind of heading up some of the other projects as well, so we worked together. Now I just paid attention quite a bit during the campaign. I mean, I was on the computer all the time paying attention, following the forums, following the news, following the debates, the YouTubes. So we had a pretty good understanding of who we wanted to talk to. And, I mean, it did take some sitting down and really figuring out who, because obviously, like you said, there's so many people that you could have talked to. I mean, we could have been on the road for 3 months interviewing people. We had a window of 3 weeks to do it, and so we knew the route we wanted to go on our road trip for the interview filming, so we just kind of plotted out who was along that route and just kind of figured it out by that method, I guess.
You know, it was walking through the movie. It was interesting that you focused on Mike Maresco. How do you say it? It's Maresco? Maresco?
Maresco.
And we've come across Mike several times. You know, you've been involved in the revolution over the past couple of years. You know, Mike's around there somewhere. And it was interesting. You started with him, you know, the walk. And you kept going back, you know, different things and tying it in and so on. And then people kept getting added on and they went back to the beginning. I tell you, but the one thing that struck me more than anything else that just, you know, everybody just grins ear to ear was the method in which you introduced the blimp. Dun, dun, dun. I mean, the music, the dramatic, you see the shadow, you know, it's coming. We just all enjoyed that so much. And I remember it getting criticized so heavily by a lot of people that, what do they care? Wasn't there money? You know, people donated what they wanted. I want a blimp. It costs me and I get so many seconds worth of blimp time. Well, boom, there you go. And I thought that was the most inspirational thing of the whole campaign. But of course, they go, well, we would have done a lot better with that money in your opinion. Well, when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me and Chris Rye, For Liberty director and producer of the documentary around the Ron Paul Revolution, we'll be talking about things that you never knew. We'll be right back in just a little bit.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Solution here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, each and every day in the afternoon driving home with y'all. And I want to make sure that you know what that answer is. Let me see what the solution is. It's more freedom. You tell me, you give me a question, you know, the freedom's the answer, what's the question? You know, so we're going to start from that, and then we'll go ahead and get into details. But I just want you to know, you know, freedom's the answer. More freedom, you know, that's the answer to whatever problems we got. Now, For Liberty, it demonstrated just the power of individuals just doing what they want. Now, you, Chris, created a PAC. Now, did you find that limiting? You wish you didn't, or it gave an opportunity for people to give money? Or, you know, did you look at all the other projects that were done outside of any FEC filings? And I saw that of interest. You had a former chair of the FEC or, you know, Federal Elections Commission or a director or something that came up and said, hey, man, this is real grassroots stuff. They don't have regulations for that. So what was your, you know, having experienced both of them, give me the traits or benefits or disadvantages of each.
Yeah, having a PAC and then trying to work with projects that are outside of the PAC structure are totally two different things. In the Ron Paul campaign, there is both of them functioning. The PACs were started more so for larger dollar amount projects where we would raise, you know, $50,000 or you know, in areas of that, or we'd put grassroots TV commercials, and we'd actually buy airtime, and we ran those in Iowa and some other states. The requirements for the FEC are quite strict, and they're annoying as hell. You know, any donation you receive over $200 has to be reported with name of the donor, their address, their occupation, you know, their place of employment, so it's quite invasive, all this information you have to provide, and it's actually takes a lot of time to track it all down and just make sure you file your forms right, which I had a lot of problems because I'm not a lawyer, and dealing with a lot of these FEC forms it's just hard to understand when you're not in this legal mindset. But the other supporters that didn't even bother with the PACs, which is great. I mean, they're just doing small little dollar projects and getting their message through. But it's quite a contrast between dealing with the FEC, going by the numbers, by the way they want you to do it, according to the laws, and then doing it the other way, where you're kind of skirting under the radar of the election commission.
Yeah, skirting under the radar. It's kiss my butts. First Amendment, I can do what I want with my money. Have a nice day. That's what it is. Oh, yeah, I don't think exactly. We were under the radar. Now, the one thing that we knew going into this when we first started our part in the revolution here is that, you know, that question came up. Do we create? Heck no. Because the second you do that, you're just begging for, you know, Big Bubba government to come in and be your partner in the effort. And you got to fill out forms and ask questions and all. You know, it's called the First Amendment. I can do what the heck I want with my stuff. But, you know, you want to get in trouble, you got to start. You start coordinating with the campaign, which fortunately for a bunch of hardcore libertarian anarchists, you know, we're like, coordinate? What's that? You know, so we don't have anything to do with the official campaign or any of these government numbers. So it kind of freed us up and set the tone for a lot of people just doing anything they want. And one, you had two main things that are featured, and there was a lot of different ones, but there were two, three main websites that were featured. You had Daily Paul. And that was, you know, a lot of focus was done on that by Michael. And then you had, and I knew Josh Manuel down at Ron Paul Forums. We'd meet each other around the country as we'd do different things. And his girlfriend, Natalie. And there was another gentleman, I can't remember his name, but they started Ron Paul Forums. And what made it so unique was the fact that it was totally unorganized. It was just people, there was a good idea, had a bunch of people supporting it, and complex projects. I mean, where you had hundreds, thousands of people that would donate the things and have their little picture put on to make a mosaic of Ron Paul's face to be published in full color in a newspaper in Iowa during the strike, all that, and it takes a few days. I mean, you couldn't have a committee accomplish that.
Yeah, the forums are amazing. So many projects were organized over the forums, and that's actually what got me interested in the grassroots side, because I have a graphic design background. That's what I went to school for. And when I saw them put together that mosaic ad, the one you're referring to, the ad that they ran, the grassroots supporters ran this ad in the Ames Tribune the day of the Iowa straw poll. And it was a mosaic ad made up of, I think, 2,000 or 3,000 faces of Ron Paul supporters that made up this face of Ron Paul. And seeing that transpire on the forum, seeing it all be planned out, watching the posts, seeing the back and forth, the arguing, the bantering over it, the raising of the funds, seeing it all come together in less than 48 hours just blew me away. I couldn't believe it.
It's the only way you get stuff like this done. I mean, that's what, you know, Freedom's Phoenix, this is what we thrive on. We got a big thing tonight. We're all over the media here on our oppositionist vaccine thing and signs and same kind of thing we do during the revolution. And if you start having too much central planning, there is no central plan for freedom. You start getting, you know, people organizing and having a little shiny badge and directors of, nothing gets done. And if you were lucky enough to get something done, later they want to do something again and you still they spend all their time worrying about the organization they created. So I'm just, you know, we know better. Well, what happened while I was there in Ames when this happened, and when that morning they had come, you know, the footage that you had, that was me doing the video of that. But what happened was they got so much demand for the newspapers. They did another printing. They were, you know, mailing them out. The newspaper made all kinds of money making the newspapers because there was so much demand worldwide for it. Plus, they had printed up a bunch of the actual just a color copies of it and delivered them to the tent the night before so that we just have them to pass out, because I guess the paper was excited about it too. You know, this is phenomenal. This is just one story after another after another after another. All the stuff and printing and things that were going on in New Hampshire and around the country, and of course the blimp and the websites. Now Daily Paul has continued. Have you talked to Michael about his plans and how he's going to keep that up forever? I mean, how does he sustain himself with that?
Right now, Michael, yeah, I have talked to him. And I think he's kind of wondering what he should do with Daily Paul right now. And the Daily Paul runs on a website system called Drupal. It's just kind of an open source website coding. And he wants to upgrade to the higher Drupal, you know, the next version of Drupal, but it costs a bunch of money, so he needs to raise money to do that. But I think he's just not really sure what he should do with it. Obviously, he should keep it going, you know, for future use. And it's being used now to support other Liberty candidates that are running and for Congress and Senate. And you know, if Dr. Paul decides to run again in 2012, I'm sure it'll be a central hub for people that'll migrate to Daily Paul and plan stuff. And so he's definitely going to keep it up. He had talked about maybe handing it over to the supporters and letting them run it. But we'll just have to see what he wants to do. But he
it always comes down to an individual. You know, without Michael there, it wouldn't be the same thing.
Yeah,
you know?
We need some kind of moderating, so someone has to kind of, you know, make sure all the posts aren't going crazy and kind of keep an eye on it.
And what happens is if you have him running or announcing or thinking he's going to run again, what was the general, as you traveled the country, talking to the people that invested so much of their lives for, you know, often over a year, you know, for this campaign of Dr. Paul run for president, and then he pulled out. And when he stopped, that had a big impact on a lot of people. And then the money went over into Campaign for Liberty. And you're like, hey, man, I don't remember donating for Campaign for Liberty. What up with that? So, you know, when we come back, you know, Chris, you know, having talked to a lot of these hardworking, devoted activists, I bet you they have an opinion of what happened. And I'd like to hear what they told Chris. And because you can't put everything in a documentary. But we'll know more when we come back here and Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Don't stop me, 'cause I'm having a good time, having a good time.
Shooting star leaping through the sky like a tiger, defying the laws of gravity.
Yeah, we're defying the laws of something. You know, I want to defy the laws of somebody trying to tell me what I can't do. That's why I want to defy. And this whole revolution was pent up, built up behind an entire generation of young people that just knew they were being lied to. You know, I'm just, you know, can I not be socially and economically engineered, you know, and be forced to smile about it? You know, and the truth is, and that's one thing that I realized, Chris, as we were going, it dawned on me when I was in the Iowa straw poll and you saw the demographic of all the people that were there by the hundreds to support Dr. Paul, thousands. And what happened was, I go, they're all that had the same thing in common. They were all about, you know, the Republic and Constitution. And more than that, it was just freedom. And they were just wanted to be left alone, and they kind of had the same language. It was very interesting to see, you know, 67-year-old people talking to teenagers and them having the same language and didn't see really a whole lot of difference between each other than one guy knew how to use his phone and the other guy didn't. But the thing is that the rhetoric was the same. But then I started to realize, why is it that you have such a large demographic, a hump on the chart of these young people? And it dawned on me that they were all born after 1980. They matured their adolescence along with the internet. They were able to go find the truth. And in the movie, you have Mary Ruart. She's a PhD that wrote a book, Healing Our World. She's been a libertarian candidate for president and been on the LNC National Committee and such. And she made a very good point. She goes, you know, there's a lot of untruth out there on the internet. But the truth is there. If you know what questions to ask, if you know what, if you're looking, the truth is there. And they've been trying to find the truth. And then here comes this 70-something-year-old man, nobody ever heard of from a little bitty district in southern Texas. And all of a sudden, boom, the guy won. We knew. And he never complained. Never, ever in any of the debates did he complain about whether he got enough time or not. He'd take his 90 seconds and kick their butt. And the people saw this, and here they come. They worked hard. They were totally devoted. And then the Texas State Convention in the late spring, I think it was April of 08, Dr. Paul announced that he was going to stop the campaign. Now, as you went around the country talking to these people, did they share their opinion about that happening and what they thought about it?
Yeah, they did. We asked pretty much everyone, either on camera or off camera, what they thought about that. And we got varied responses. Some people were very upset. Some people figured that it was the right thing to do. It was a mixed bag of people's reactions, but, you know, some people were more let down than others. The film itself shows some of the reactions that people had. Other different opinions when he decided to pull out.
Now, what was your opinion? What do you think he should have done?
I think the way it went down was pretty good, to tell you the truth, because it all kind of culminated at the Rally for the Republic, and I thought that was just an in-your-face thing to do. It was just a total act of defiance against the RNC, who all along did everything in their power to make Ron Paul look kooky and quacky, even though he was espousing the views of that party's founding of the Republican Party.
Yeah, you know, that's so one thing. Yeah, we were there at the Rally for the Republic, and right next to Minneapolis-St. Paul, next to the Republican National Convention, and I'll tell you, that's what pulled it off. That brought it all together. Had that not been as big a success, I don't think that him pulling would have been as appreciated, because we were all, you know, take it to the convention. Oh, we'll so stuff it down their throat. You know, it's just, you know, it's a game that they're playing. Let's go show them what for. And doing it this way, I guess, you know, it's probably a classier act when you look at how it was perceived by the entrenched bureaucracy of the Republican Party. And they, have your own thing. But I'm sure they didn't appreciate that it was better attended, had a lot more enthusiasm, was a lot better, that had all the attention, it was a lot more peaceful, we didn't have all the cops everywhere, you know, and, you know, pounding on shields and stuff, and parties every night. It was phenomenal. And then you got to wonder, why are they so afraid of his message? And I tell you the big reason, it's just where the money's coming from. Who's funding all the activities of even down to the precinct level of all of these, this party machination of everything, of how they socially and economically control us to rip us off.
Well, and then, that's exactly it. It's fighting against the status quo. And the supporters that support Ron Paul and support freedom and the Constitution and these principles, the founding principles of our nation, the people that believe in those things still to this day and understand what they mean and understand the history of the country, they are a serious threat to the status quo, because the status quo does what they want, which is totally violating all these principles. And they have the media behind them, so they can cover up their lies. They cover up all the spin they do. And seeing the two conventions just 8 miles apart across the town, where you have the RNC, which is on virtual lockdown. It's the example of what a police state would be. I mean, they got a 10-foot cage put up, erected around the center there, the convention center. Then you got 8 miles across town at the Target Center, is where Ron Paul's Rally for the Republic was. It's the alternate convention. And to look at the two in the same, happening over the same couple days there, it was such a contrast of, you have this protect the status quo by all means. Let's call in, you know, $40 million in security for the weekend, versus the Ron Paul event, totally peaceful, no incidents, no security, just people there believing and being happy to be around other people that have the same beliefs as them. And really, it's such a stark contrast between the two. And it's a really good example of how it's kind of us against them mentality. They have all the guns, they have all the money, but we have the ideas, and we know our history. So it'll be interesting to see how this shakes down, I think, in the coming years.
How do you think? I mean, this off-year election, we're going to what? I mean, what do you think's going to happen?
I really don't know, to tell you the truth.
Do you care? I mean, you know, are we really that concerned about, you know, the heck with these guys? You know, we're... You know, it doesn't matter. I mean, the truth's out of the bag. There's not really a whole lot they're going to be able to do about it.
I think at some point Washington could just become irrelevant, because they're making decisions that just people aren't even caring about anymore, because it doesn't represent them. And there's obviously a large problem with the financial system. So who knows how this thing is going to go down? But really, I hope that If there is a major crisis in the country in the near future based around the economic system, I really hope that people just don't all of a sudden run to the government to save us, to pull us out of this problem. That's a good opportunity for the message of freedom in the Constitution. That's a really good opportunity for that message to be brought forward and see, look what happens when you ignore this. Look what happens when you lie and constantly make up things and spin and keep the people in the dark and keep them entertained by things that don't matter on TV. And this is what happens. You lose track. You forget how the country is supposed to be run. And it could be an opportunity, but I worry at the same time that it's also an opportunity for the enemy, so to speak. It's an opportunity for them to just further clamp down on society and even put us under even more tyranny. So it's an interesting time in history. You got to give them that.
Oh yeah, no, you're going to live it too, buddy. I'm telling you, here it comes. But a lot of us guys that started, you know, at a young age, I'd already been into it for probably a decade by the time I got your age now, you know, and I just know what's coming, and I don't think most people are prepared for it. But those that were paying attention to what Dr. Paul was saying and doing their own research and such and following just what's happening right now, today, since this campaign of 08, they're starting to see that, yeah, the old man was right. And he was right for some fundamental reasons. And this is not going to heal itself. I always say it's not going to happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And we're almost at the overnight part. In fact, you know what? How much time we got? You know, the next segment, what I'm going to do, this is an interesting story I'll tell now. We'll play the segment when we come back. When you came to Arizona to do some interviews, you interviewed Ed Vallejo, which was the head meetup coordinator here in Arizona. A lot of stuff went through and around the meetups here. Myself, started the revolution thing and did the artwork and such, and went around the country and such. And then Charles Goyette. Now, Charles Goyette, he was the first one, while I was producing for him as a talk show host, we were the first ones that announced this on national television on Fox, talking about Ron Paul and all that kind of, and it exploded. Well, what happened was, while you were here, he got a call from a publisher that bought his book that's just coming out this month. He was on CNBC today and Glenn Beck yesterday, and we'll play a little bit of that, and he did exactly what Ron Paul said. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
It's more than a feeling. More than a feeling here on Declare Your Independence. It's some logic and reason. We're sitting here going, duh. You know, this is so duh. And we had such fun making sure that we share with everyone we knew and saw that it was duh for us. But, there, we had to overcome a lot. You know, people are, hey, man, did I see it on CNN? Did Wolf Blitzer say it? Did I go over and Fox and Hannity and Combs and O'Reilly tell me what was what? You know, is that where we got our news? No. Well, what happened was the revolution may not be televised, but it's going to be YouTubed all to heck. You know, and then you have people with some skills like Chris Rye that put together the movie for Liberty. You know, that was another thing. Didn't you have the High Tide video? What was your role in that? Didn't you have some street cred with that one?
The High Tide was a computer-animated, minute-long commercial that Nathan Evans, a motion graphics artist, conceived and did all the graphics work on. My role was, I edited the speech, the words that you hear that basically drive the animation. So it was my job to listen to a bunch of speeches and then kind of piece together and edit together this minute-long message that kind of touched on all Ron Paul's issues that he was writing on during the election, and it was very tricky to be able to cram that all in under a minute time.
Oh no, I think you did a fantastic job. That that was the one thing that I think the big bad guys didn't anticipate is how much skill we all have in various different ways. When you people are allowed to just express themselves and do what they want, it's amazing what comes out. They're going, wait, where's your zillion-dollar marketing managing consulting Madison Avenue guy? We don't have one of those, or maybe it was his cousin's former roommate's 17-year-old son. He did something. Oh, okay. Well, it's a link there somewhere. But they were useless. And some of the commercials that the campaign actually did with all their super consultants and professional whatever, they suck. Now,
the campaign ads, the official ones, were were not very well liked by the grassroots community.
Because they sucked.
we just stepped up and just made our own, you know. Like you said, I mean, everyone's just doing their own thing. And what you touched on earlier is totally true. There's such a wide variety of people that were active during the campaign and they're still active today even, that someone would be really, really, really good at one particular little thing. And then another one would be really, really good at another thing. And they meet on the forums and then plan these projects together, and then you get the best of both worlds, and it all kind of comes together in a final product or a final project when they finish it. And it's something that you would pay millions of dollars to hire out to some PR company, to some very well-known people that plan these things. They're very expensive. And we were doing the same thing, no money, just people devoted. They would... they're happy to share their individual talents because it's going for the greater picture, the greater good of what they're trying to accomplish with spreading the message.
And that's what the common theme was for everything. And it's rare that you have someone that would get this much attention, that would have the experience and the philosophy behind them, that would understand that it was the message. You know, all you had to do was be pure and consistent on the message, and the rest of it just take care of itself. And we knew that here. And the reason we went in both feet so early, even before he announced, was once we knew that he was even thinking about maybe sort of having a blue ribbon panel to determine a committee to decide whether he was going to run or not, we were already all in. We just, all we wanted to, are you sure you're going to do this? Hey, if we get enough support, that's it. That's all we need to know. Thank you very much. We won't need to talk to you anymore. We're going to go plow, because Dr. Paul had been to a couple of our Freedom Summits, and we had interviewed and talked to him before, and knew what his rhetoric was. He had run for president as a libertarian in 88. We already knew what he was going to say. And if he got even the least teeny weeny bit, little bit of an audience, we knew this was going to explode, because this is the message that is always driven revolutions between the ears. Heck, even Ronald Reagan was saying this kind of stuff. Goldwater, whenever this stuff comes up, except for the first time in the age of the internet and archiving of everything, you know, Dr. Paul has been consistent for 35 years. So we're going, people, they have no concept of what's going on. Even Dr. Paul didn't. I'm just going, look, you guys, the campaign, they were thinking so small. And I'm just, look, I don't want anything, you know, I understand. You guys do what you, the traditional, whatever. They even didn't like the word revolution. They were like, you sure? Talk to the hand. You know, we don't have anything to do with y'all. You know, we'll keep you up on, you know, if we need to let you know we're going to be somewhere, just keep somebody out of our way or whatever. You know, we'll rock and roll, because we knew the message, and that Dr. Paul was very good at giving it, and he was consistent, and he wasn't going to back down. That's all we needed. That way we could put our head down and plow, and we didn't have to worry about what he was saying. We were working, and when it just, and we had all this stuff done. There were people all over the country that were willing and able to make sure that he got the skeletal structure for people to even be able to come together. And then you have tools like Meetup. And then it was all over. Now, of course, you have the people. And tell me about this. Your experience in going around and talking to people and interviewing and so on. There had to be some, we call them shiny badgers. You know, I got a title. I got a, you know, I got a thing I'm in charge of, and my minions are going to whatever and be in control. But it seemed to me when you did your movie, you kind of avoided all those people and just went to the grassroots.
Well, yeah, that was our intention the entire time, was to tell the story from the view of the supporters. Because without the supporters, there wouldn't have been a campaign. I mean, it would have been there would have been no money bombs. There would have been, it would just been a small campaign, like the official campaign was anticipating it would be. So the campaign got so big because of the grassroots people doing what they did.
No, early on, I remember they were just ecstatic if they could get $10 million. That was their goal.
Right. So knowing that the grassroots people basically made the campaign to be what it is and made all the attention with the blimp and brought all the stuff in the media, that's where we saw the interesting story that we wanted to tell. I mean, telling the official campaign story wouldn't be very fun. It wouldn't be very exciting. It's just the same old thing that a lot of other campaigns do. So that's why we decided to do that, is just to, for the story, to keep it fun, keep it interesting. And there's so many characters in the movement. You know, there's so many people with these awesome senses of humor and sarcastic, like Thomas Woods, you know, and these guys are so great. and you just get the camera on them, and they just give you gold, you know, on camera. So we were able to keep the movie fun. We were able to keep it funny. So that's just the route we decided to go with it.
I think it gave the flavor that was so – a lot of things I didn't even know, you know. And I just – and because we were just busy. Everybody was busy in their own thing. And I think you tied it together. And – you know, you couldn't – well, in fact, you had that as the last scene in the movie is me saying, you can't do a documentary and cover all this.
It could have been a four-part miniseries. Seriously, you could have done it for me. It could have been 6 hours long.
Yeah, and I think you did a great job. I mean, seriously, it really got the flavor, and I'm glad that you put a lot of attention on Dr. Paul's speeches and, you know, the events in the campaign and the things that a lot of people would easily forget if it wasn't for the documentary, is that how, like, Fox News would have all these text polls and then try to discredit their own polls because Paul would win them all the time. So, you know, I'm just going, you know what, these guys are going to have short memory. They're going to come back and bamboozle everybody. And then all of a sudden, after the election, you get Sean Hannity coming up. Oh, the Republican Party has found its spine. We're all cured now. And everything. And I remember one thing that, you know, of course, it wouldn't be in your movie, but during April, it was like the 18th, 19th of April, is after the tax protest. Ron Paul, Granny Warrior event that they had on April 15th in Washington, D.C. This is prior to the Revolution March. They had another event there. And right after that, Dr. Paul had a meeting where a lot of the guys would come and we just talked and such. And I remember people expressing their views and, you know, a lot like Michael and Trevor and myself and a lot of the, you know, the grassroots activists, you know, go to the convention, man. Let's go, 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 go. And there were people that were more involved in traditional politics that were thinking, you know, long term and using the Republican Party and that kind of stuff. But the one thing that I remember that I was able to express was this. I go, when this election is over, I guarantee that Dr. Paul and Peter Schiff, that was there with his brother, and, you know, people like that, they're going to have you on the radio, on the television, regularly trying to regain their credibility as media. Oh, yeah, see, this is the guy telling us what's... When they were so right for so long before and allowed people to lose half of their wealth because they lied them into staying in the positions that everybody knew was untenable. You knew that it was falling. Dr. Paul detailed this, and they were there, part of the rape of the American people and all of their wealth. And I'm just like, you know, I have absolutely no sympathy or empathy whatsoever for these media outlets that are going to go away. And they're going to be replaced by a lot of the people that you talk to. Now, when we come back, I want Chris to go ahead and you know, share some more thoughts on a lot of things. But one thing I want to make sure that we get into, has new media been created? There was such a void. There was such a hole that was not there just to get the truth out about the most important things in this country, in this world, that were totally avoided. And now you have an entirely new generation of tech-savvy people and devoted freedom-fighting individuals that now have the capacity to get the word out. The other side doesn't want them to. There's a battle coming. We'll talk about more when we come back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, Chris Rye, director of For Liberty, FOR Liberty Movie.com. We'll be right back.